From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools. And today, Andrew, what are we going to talk about?
We're going to continue the commands of WinDBG, and we're going to focus on the commands that tell you about memory, as in what protection it is, size, who allocated it, all type of stuff. So just the raw memory facts. And this show is going to have a lot of theory in it, because memory, the reason why you care about memory is cause and effect, and so you need to know what the causes and effects are. So that's what it's about.
Excellent. Let's get started. When I woke up this morning, I was like, I hope it's theory related if we're talking about memory.
Well, yeah, we're taping this the day before Thanksgiving. It's the day to do theory, right? So, all right, let's jump into it. I'm also going to do the standard live debug. Good old Notepad. We love Notepad being debugged.
Got a large font. I like that.
Well, I think it's much more readable, right?
Yeah.
So a process has memory. And the other way of looking at memory, whoops, that's not what I want, is to use VMMap. And we'll run VMMap at the same time.
Our old friend, VMMap.
Yep, so it's from... Now, this is actually a good... why isn't VMMap working? Well, we've broken into the process and actually can't inject what it needs to do anything. So you actually have to run it, go. VMMap is actually able to now execute what it needed to do, and now we can break in again. We talked about VMMap in episode, I don't know what it was, 4, 5, 6, way down the front, right? We can see that it's got 63 megabytes of commit. And we use all these different words like commit and private and working and stuff, and then there's all these ones down the bottom. And so you can get that same information that VMMap gives you much better, also in the debugger. The way that you do the vast majority of this stuff is there's a debugger extension called bang address, right? And the first one that kind of gives you the equivalent of the view of VMMap is minus summary. Lots and lots of numbers. You'll notice that now this has got a huge amount of free space, and that's because it's a 64-bit process. You get 8 terabytes of memory in 64 bits. That's not 64 bits. We talked about this before. Where it's like, is it 45 bits that Windows runs at? It's 40. I always forget the number. It's in the 40s.
Yeah, it's in the 40s. We don't use all 64 bits.
Yeah, because we realize that we're never going to have that much RAM, so why should we waste making a silicon that remembers that? It's just pointless. You're never going to use those bits. So,
yeah.
So that's why it's not actually the 64-bit number as the big upper number. You'll see that percent of total, this is saying, well, realistically, this rounds out statistically to be nearly all the memory. It's actually 99.999999 or something. And then of the actual memory that isn't free, as in the memory that's allocated, then we've got the splits down here. Then we've got the, on the left here, we've got the types. And this correlates back to VMMap, where it's split up into the various usages. You'll notice that VMMap has more categories. That's because it actually does a little bit more kernel analysis and actually splits some things out. And its numbers will be a little bit different because Mark's gone to the effort of truly understanding where the thing came from a kernel point of view, the overhead in the kernel, also the user space, fragmentation issues, and all that stuff. So the numbers won't match exactly, but they will be relatively close. The other thing you'll note is that Mark uses 1,024 rounding, and the debugger uses 1,000 rounding. So you'll get them slightly different, which is why it's lowercase b. Lowercase b means 1,000 rounding. Uppercase b means 1,024. B is meant to be bit, but people don't use it that way. They use it for the 1,000 versus 1,024. Mm. And so what we can see here is, most of the process is free, not unexpected. If this was a 32-bit process, then you'll see a much lower number, around the gigabyte range.
2 gigabytes.
What's the best way of explaining how a process, if you have a 32-bit process on 32-bit Windows, as a user process, it can only use 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Unless you use the 3GB switch.
Yeah. In 64-bit, it actually can use 4 gig. And it's because...
Right.
You can probably explain it better than me because you're more the kernel guy, but...
Yeah, I mean, from what I can remember about that, it's essentially because in the 32-bit environment, we have to use that upper half of the address space for the for kernel mode, where yeah. on 64-bit, we're using a way upper address space for the kernel addresses.
Yeah. So. Now, I think, does it tell you? I'm not sure. Yeah, it's up in this cover range, this 7FD range, way above the 2 gig range.
Way above 2 gig, yeah.
And that's, I think it's eight, at the 8 terabyte range coming down, right?
Yeah, so on 64-bit apps get 8 terabytes of virtual address space.
So the point is you can, on 64-bit Windows, you actually can have a user, a 32-bit program that uses 4 gig of RAM and not 2 gig of RAM. And the way that you make the operating system allow you to do that, there's a bit in the header that in, called the PE header, the portable executable header of the XE. It says, I am large address space aware. Right. And if you turn that one little bit on, it will allow the memory to, instead of saying you're out of memory at 2 gig, it'll say you're out of memory at 4 gig. And if you're on a x86 with the /3GB switch, it would run out at 3 gig.
Yeah, if you don't set that, you still get the old behavior. I think that's just for compatibility reasons.
And I think for Flight Simulator 9 or 10, one of those, the one before Microsoft Flight, there's all these hacks that say, turn on this, use this tool and flip the bit, and it changes it from 2 gig up to 4 gig, which in Flight Simulator, because it needs all the textures for the land. It means you get a better load experience. Completely not supported, it just happens to work.
Yeah, right. The one before Flight was Flight Sim X.
Yeah. I think the Flight Sim X1 is 64-bit or is larger space aware already, so you don't have to fool around with it. So it's also digitally signed, I think. So anyway, you have all the different categories. So much like in VMAP, you can kind of work out, this much memory is being used by the heap and this much is used by the stack. So what we'll do is just... Let's run again, because we're on this very start screen, and Notepad, when you just start it, quite frankly, uses nothing, really. So we'll just do an open, allocates a whole lot of memory for various reasons, makes some threads, all that type of stuff, and we'll break in again.
And we'll see it loaded all the modules there. You get the printout as it loads every DLL.
Yeah, and so and we'll do it F5 in VMAP. I've got to remember not to have it paused. And then break in again. And if we do a control D, which we talked about, you can see the difference. So we added 47 more meg of commit and private, blah, blah, blah. And you can see down here, this doesn't really fit in the screen very well. Lots of new stuff, all that green stuff. So once again, we can do the same thing in here and see the same pieces of information. And we're still at 100%, even though we've allocated a bit more.
You're never going to get much of that 8 terabyte used.
Nah.
Not by Notepad, anyway. You have to open a really big file.
Yeah. And that's actually a good segue into what map files is. So sometimes when you load a file, you read it off the hard drive as chunks and put it into memory, and that will go into heap. But some programs load the file just by saying, I want that file. And what it does is... instead of worrying about reading the file, copying it, blah, 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 what it does is it says, put that file somewhere in my address space. So if your address space is like this, it just grabs the file, and with 8 terabytes of space, you will have space for a big file, and it just grabs the file and puts it into the address space. And what that means is, instead of this whole address space being backed by the page file, the part that's committed, which we'll get to what that means, instead of going to the page file for each of those 4K blocks that happens to be needs to be accessed, instead of going to the page file, that memory map file, we just go to the file instead. Mm-hmm. And that's called memory map files. And it's a really good, fast way of just opening up a file and accessing it. Because the base address that you get, like at pointer 10,000, if you go to 10,020, well, you'll just read that byte, you'll just be reading 20 bytes into the file. You don't have to worry about seeking in the file and all that stuff. And the memory manager worries about all that stuff behind the scenes. So you will see big memory map files. And as you can see here, there is 48 meg. And so 68 megabytes of image, which is executable in DLLs. An image page is only brought into the process by Word Library. And map files is create map section. So there's two different APIs that do that. So we can see 68 meg was brought in by loading the image, and 48 meg was brought in by mapping. Then we've got data and data and data. tips we've talked about in another episode, which is to do with the thread environment block, which is the stats per each stack, or sorry, per each thread. And then the PEB, which is environment variables and all that type of stuff. All right, so what we're going to spend a little bit of time here is going through this theory here, what these uppercase things mean. Every block of memory in Windows is cut up into 4K chunks, and it's called a page. There is three usages or types of memory, which is these three: image, mapped, and private. And I kind of alluded to it. Image is the ones where we've loaded it for the purpose of executing from it. That's the only way to bring in a file from disk and allow it to execute. You can't execute from a map page. It's just the memory manager won't let you. You can actually allocate memory yourself and mark it as execute using private memory. And so that's how code that injects into you works. And so there's three types: imaged, mapped, and private. The private ones, you know, heaps, stacks, anything that's just not, that is coming from the page file. So these two are backed by a file. This one's backed by an .exe. This is backed by like a document, and this one's backed by the page file. Every single page is one of those types, and it's in one of three states: free, commit, or reserved. Free is memory that is just not in your address space, has no purpose yet, right? So it's marked as free. And as we said, there's 8 terabytes of that hanging around. Commit is pages where we say, if you access this, it will be valid. And so that's the three above, so backed by image, map file, or the page file via private memory. And then there's reserved, which if you access it, you'll get an access violation because it doesn't exist yet. But you reserve that space, which means you will not, if an allocation comes along, nobody's going to use that area. So what you do is you can allocate a big block, for like for cache, that you want to be linear, but you only commit a little bit of it because you've only got like 100 meg cache so far out of 10 gig, right? And so you kind of you reserve the space. And that's how stacks work. A stack doesn't allocate all of it. It grows and grows and grows. And then there's a thing called a guard page, which is one of the stats down below. I'll get Chad to explain how they work. And then you get reserved. So you get reserved, commit, but it's guard, and then commit, and it's real. Can you explain how guard pages turn into real memory? I mean,
you're putting me on the spot here.
Yeah, well, you should know.
when you hit a guard page, we're going to go into, we're going to take a page fault, right? We're going to hit the memory manager.
But what's that mean, though? What's a page fault? What does that mean in the kernel?
Right. So, a guard page is just a page. It's certain flags that are marked on that page, on the PTE, right? And so when we hit that, we're going to hit some kind of an exception. It's going to be trapped by the memory manager, and then it's going to go take some action.
So it's kind of like a try and a catch, where you go, oh, that's fine. I know that was bad memory, but I know how to solve it because I'll commit it for you.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Cool. Yay, team. So you have the different ways memory got brought into the process, which is the type. You have its state, whether it's accessible or not, quite frankly. And then you have all the different ways that we secure it, right?
Yeah. The other thing about guard pages is a lot of times they are used by things like app verifier or driver verifier when you enable page heap or special pool, for example, in kernel mode. And we intentionally mark pages as guard because we want to trap when someone accesses them because it's probably a bug, and we want to catch it.
Yeah, okay. So there's the cases where guard pages are used for analysis, and there's cases where guard pages are used for normal operation.
Yeah, a lot of times guard pages, I mean, you'll typically see those hit when you enable special debugging tools like driver verifier or app verifier.
And I think if I find a stack, is there a split bar around here somewhere? No, there's not. There it is right there. So stacks start from the bottom, and it starts as rewrite because obviously you can read and write from the stack. And then there's a page above it, which is three pages worth, which is still committed, but it is rewrite guard. And as Chad said, it causes an exception when it fires, and then what will happen is the bottom page will get turned into a real page that will, the 68 will grow to 72, or it might add plus 12, wherever it is. And then the guard will move up. And so as you go up and up and up, you'll move into reserve space. And when the stack grows and grows and grows, you know, the reserve gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and you'll end up with a situation where you only have three guard pages at the top, no reserve left, and then stack below it. And then the next fault, the next request to go up the stack even higher, will say, well, the guard pay can't grow, and then it will throw an exception saying, is it stack overflow exception?
Yeah, you hit a stack overflow exception, we'll have to trap that. And either, you know, if the stack can grow, then we'll grow it, and if not, then we'll throw some kind of...
And it never shrinks, right? Once you go up, it never comes down. I'm not sure. Yeah.
But, typically, you use those for when you want you have to take some special action when someone touches that memory.
So. Mm. I think you could use this as a troubleshooting tool. You could run a program for a long time and then go look at all your stacks and see if anybody's getting close to the line. Because then you might want to tweak how big the stacks are by default. We went through that with the bang threads command either last week or one week, where we that command shows you how big the stack is. So you could tweak that in your program, in your compiler for that thread. The access bits are kind of obvious. You know, it read only means you can only read from it. Execute read, that's predominantly what you'll find for code, because obviously there's this one down here, execute. It was actually deprecated back in XP, I think, where we now prefer you to use execute read instead of over execute. Then there's obviously execute rewrite as well, which is a bit concerning, because that means that anybody in the process can write to this page and then code can execute from that page. So for some reason, there is 4K of memory.
One page,
that is you're allowed to just go and modify and execute from. So it's kind of...
Not sure what that's about.
Yeah, I don't know what that is about either, and I'm kind of interested to go look at that afterwards. Read-only is just straight read-only data, so when you maybe map in a file, you can... or not map a file, but, you know, just allocate some memory, say, this is static information, just let it be. Execute read is code normally. Rewrite is your general heaps and your stacks and stuff like that. Write copy, we kind of talked about that before. What you can do is say, when this page is loaded, it's backed by an image file. But what we're going to say is people are allowed to modify that file, that page, that piece of memory. But if they do, we don't want them to change the file. Because if you have a map page that is rewrite against the file and you change it, it will flush it to the disk as a change. So it's, any modifications changes the file on the disk. Which is great when you modify a file on the disk.
Yeah.
It's not great when it's an executable, right? And it's predominantly used for debugging. And so when you debug a module, what we do is we tag a page as write copy, and then when the debugger modifies it to put a breakpoint on it, for example, you get a copy of the page. The private copy is now in backed by private memory, not backed by image or mapped memory. And then you put you rewrite the assembler in it, put the breakpoint, the int 3, the CC, hexadecimal, and then you're using your private copy of it. It means you're not modifying the original one. So that's what write copy page is. So far, 308K has been done. The debugger case is the way we explain it, but the reality is the real case is actually global variables. So global variables have them hard coded in the executable, and you load them. And what it says is all these global variable pages that the executable has, make it as write copy. So if we all open up Notepad and we all don't change a thing, we're all just going to use that one page and share it between each other, once with shareable memory that you'll see in VMMap. The write copy page, as soon as someone goes to change the global variable, I'll copy that page and have my own private one. So each process will get its own if all three finally modify it. And that's what write copy is used for. So we've used 308K of pages have had their global variables changed. And then it's kind of useful for out-of-memory situations. You want to go, where did the memory go? So this is the largest free region. So this tells you how much space the biggest allocation has taken of that type. And so it's not really fragmentation. It's more of like a memory leak situation. So if someone did one big allocation, we want to know that. The biggest free allocation you can make at the moment that's out there is 3.7 terabytes. So there's
7.3.
Which means, I mean, if you look at that, it means there's 700 gigabytes. Well, it's not 700 gigabytes used. It's just the fragmentation of the space means that the biggest one left is 7.3. Mm. And we can look at the VMAP for the same thing.
I think this, the fragmentation tends to be a little bit more of an issue potentially on 32-bit apps because if you have to make a big, you know, allocation. Or
yeah, I mean, 64-bit is kind of relevant. Yeah. You'll run out of system commit, which is the memory, which is RAM plus page file. So the ability to remember committed pages where they came from, you'll run out of that before you'll run out of anything else. And then if I clicked on free in here, and then I sorted by size, and you can see the same thing. The biggest free block is 7.8. As I said, this is 1,024 rounding. The other one is 1,000 rounding, which is why
they don't quite line up.
They don't quite line up. And then you know the biggest image is 10. Biggest block is 10 megabytes. I'll find that guy just for image. Now you notice that this is bigger than that, but there's a plus sign. So within this, there is the biggest allocation. We go, well, why does VMAP say 19 meg for the region and not 10 megabytes? And that's where the next command comes in. So we've kind of explained heuristically what the whole system looks like. Let's find, what was that address? We'll copy that address. Actually, we'll copy this one. So instead of using summary, we can pass it a number. And VMAP and the debugger are great to use side by side, right? So you go, particularly when we did the differential stuff, and we showed how to do memory leaks way back when. If you find a block of memory and you go, okay, this is 200K of allocation, why do we have it? And let's say you don't get the stack alignment, stack visualization of it. What you can do is grab the address in here, jump across to the dump of the same thing or the live debug of the same thing and go bang address the thing and it will tell you the same information and then, but then you can just go and look at the raw data, like dump the bytes of this guy. Mm. That's a bit weird.
I think you...
Did I get the wrong one?
Copied.
Yeah, I don't think I copied it.
Yeah, you copied something.
That's seven... Oh! It's truncated the... Mark, you got a bug. It truncated the front.
There you go.
There we go, that's better. So, and then we can look at this... Look at a couple of these bytes. And you can see some raw... hexadecimal that represents the executable. The tree in VMAP is what this bang address thing can show you. There's the concept of an allocation base and then there's the base address. The allocation base, this one, the F000, that's the tree head, right? You allocate in blocks, also executables when they're loaded, we allocate the whole thing as one unit. So X is 10 meg, so we make a 10 meg block. After that, we then read the header of it, the PE header, and it says, the PE header literally says, at this offset I have data, at this offset I have code, all these things. I have P data, L data, R data, reloc, all that stuff. And the loader knows, well, you know, the dot text, which is the assembler, well, that needs to be execute read. The R resource, well, that needs to be read only because that's used for the resource strings. And then down here somewhere, you might have some rewrite. See, that's the dot data, which is the global variables, stuff like that. So you allocate the range, which is a virtual alloc command, and then you change the things within that, which is called virtual protect. And so what you can see here is this block of memory was allocated, and that's its base address, and then at a 1K offset, which was the first one in here, this one here. We change it to execute read, and so that's the one, so that's its range. That's the end address. This is actually the address of the next segment, so it should be like minus one technically. Mm-hmm. How big it is, so you can get the size. What type of memory it is. So this is backed by an image on disk. This is committed, which means it's accessible. It's got the protection of execute read. If you do this for example, if we look at the registers and get the current stack pointer, which would be this is RSP, which is stack pointer. Do it for that. There's a shorthand notation for registers. If you put in RSP, that works. If you type it like this, it will do a symbol lookup for the phrase RSP. Right. So it's looking for local variables, globals, everything that resolves to RSP. And if it can't find it, it then goes, OK, I'll use the register. So a symbol lookup takes ages, and I'm not even going to do it because I know how long it takes. If you put the at sign on the front, it tells the debugger, treat it as a register straight away, and so you get instant lookup. So if we look at this RSP, here's the allocation base. So here's the bottom of the stack, the allocation of what it was, and then because of those guard pages in reserved, the allocation actually says reserve the entire thing first and then commit some. And so you can see that private memory rewrite as you expect on the stack. The address stuff is one of those things you go, I have a crash, why? Look at the protection, look at the backing. If you have things like Stack Overflow, look at the range of the allocation and work out where the guard page ends, right, and see how close you are to the line. When you have out of memory issues, look at the overall address minus summary. And when you have fragmentation issues, you can use that biggest block thing and memory legs as well. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go into heap analysis today or anything like that because there's another tool called Application Verifier, which is the user mode twin of Driver Verifier,
right.
Brother, sister. I'm a twin, so that's why I say twin all the time.
Uh-huh.
So we'll do the heap analysis in that episode. When you're doing, if you can just remember bang address, you're fine, right? That should get you to root cause most of the time. There's two other commands in this space, and I'll show it to you. It's roughly the same information, just shown a different way. Bang address, actually, it's good to know actually where some of these things come from. So we showed this before. Show me where the command bang address came from. So it came from ext. There's another one called vprot, which I'll execute in a sec. And it comes from uext, so user mode extension. So we talked about how the debugger will automatically load some extensions for you based on the target. Because this is a user mode target, it also loaded the uext extension for us.
And that's actually uext.dll. You'll see
yes.
that in your debugger.
So if we run this one, it's roughly the same information as before. It's still allocation base address, roughly the same information. It's just another way of getting to the same thing. So if you see vprot, just mentally go, well, some other team implemented it as well, and we've never merged the two, never decided to make one better than the other. If we choose a symbol, let's find out where this code comes from. We'll find this address. So just for fun, I'll use vprot. Just say you end up with an address and you're not quite sure. Actually, I'll give a bit. I know a better example. So if we dump out some of the stack. So I just grabbed the top frame and down. And so these 7FDs are resolving to symbols in the file, but some of these aren't. So this like this A451 thing. I don't know where this guy comes from, and I don't know if he's going to be real or not, but let's find out. And he is. He's private memory, committed, and rewrite, and he's in a heap. Bang address does give you all these helpers at the bottom, so if you hit an image, it will give you an LM command. If you hit a heap address, it will give you a bang heap. What I'm looking for, I'll just use this one. I was going to try to find a string, like a global variable that was a string, mm-hmm. but I didn't find one. But if we do this of a image, as we expected, it was an image, there's another command called mapped file. So if you have address that you're not quite sure where it comes from, because you do a DPS and it doesn't resolve to a symbol, but it has a, if it tends to have a really high number, it usually means it's mapped in. So you go, what file is this actually touching on the disk? So it's very easy with a bang address to work out what image it came from, and it's very easy if it's a heap address, but if you have a mapped file, it's hard. So what you can do on address is do bang map file, and it'll tell you on the hard drive where it's coming from. So it's a good way of kind of sussing out why memory got allocated, why it's mapped, and who owns it. The image files are mapped as well. I was looking for a map page. Actually, I can find one. I need just to go into here and grab one of these. I keep on forgetting about this guy.
VM.
Yeah. So if I do...
AE.
Mark, you owe me a video. You have to come and for penance. So there we go. We can see that that memory address is backed by...
Icon cache.
So it's a good way of working out where stuff comes from. So yeah, you don't always have a VM map. You very rarely have a VM map when you get a crash. Yeah. So it's a good way of getting to roughly the same information. And if we look at VM map for that guy on the far right... Mark, VM map does not like this minimum resolution. There you go, icon cache. Come on, tooltip. There we go. Same information. All right, so that's it about user mode memory. Takeaways are bang address minus summary and bang address the address. Optionally use vprot and map file to give you a bit more information. Just use it to work out why memory or how memory exists under what purpose. And then, particularly with crashes, you go, I've got this address, why did I crash? And you know, it's usually not allocated. The first thing you see on a crash is you go bang address, the number, okay, it's mem free. It's not an address space. Or the other thing you get is you get stack corruption. Is it called a buffer overflow when you wipe your RSP? Or you wipe your EBP? So when you're jumping back for a return,
mm-hmm.
So on the stack you push on what function you want to return to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, it's a buffer overflow. So if you go too far that way and blat it, you will return to whatever the hello world text is. Whatever that hexadecimal is, you'll fly off and that'll be your new instruction pointer.
Mm-hmm.
If you can have a command that you're on, which actually weirdly may look right, just by pure chance, the code may look like decent assembler, you'll have an access violation. You go, why? I don't get it. And so what you do is you do a bang address on the three, the thing you're reading, the thing you're writing to, and also what assembler you're on, the one at the front. And this better have
execute
on it. Doesn't have to be in memory. It doesn't have to be an image page. It could be private because it could be injected code. But it has to have the execute on it. Right, this thing right here. If you do see private memory, kind of think about it, because it's, you know, third-party hookings around a fair bit, and people inject code in you, and sometimes they just don't hook it right. I mean, someone has to have a really good knowledge of assembler to go, all right, here's the assembler I'm reading, let's rewrite the assembler on the fly with these offsets and blah, blah, blah. And with ASLR, address space layout randomization introduced in Vista?
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It really doesn't exist much anymore because it's just too hard to do. So if you find you're executing from a private page, that's weird. If it has the execute bit on it,
yeah.
Be very suspicious.
Yeah.
That's a quick overview of memory for user space. We will have another episode now on kernel.
Kernel.
Nice. Your favorite.
I love kernel.
So yeah, I'm a user guy and Chad's a kernel guy. So
awesome. That's the show for this week. If you have questions, you can email us at defragtools@microsoft.com or you can leave comments in the show notes and we'll get back to you there. And see you next week.
Have a good week.